Guten Tag. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for your patience. My name is Chris Keneally. I'm the host of a podcast from Copyright Clearance Center called Beyond the Book, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to our program this afternoon, when audiobooks and podcasts collide. As the audio revolution has unfolded, audiobooks and podcasts have existed largely in worlds adjacent, with the simplicity of a major retailer for audiobooks and a major source for podcasts. But change is upon us. The recent acquisition of multiple podcast networks is creating rivals in the world of podcasts. Meanwhile, audiobook publishers are evolving beyond their signature format with the development of original works that exist in a middle ground between audiobooks longer and podcasts shorter. This coming collision of audiobooks and podcasts means more choice for consumers, along with more confusion for publishers, authors, and other content producers trying to reconcile subscription, streaming, and unit sale business models. My panel today will look ahead to a future of growing audio publishing and shrinking distinction among formats, and I'd like to introduce them to you. From the very far end is first Valentina Caladina. Valentina, welcome.
Thank you.
Valentina Caladina is a business development manager at Castbox, where she is responsible for partnerships with podcasters in Europe. She also co-hosts a weekly live show, Pod Bites, for the Castbox platform Livecast. She began her career as a journalist, including working in Paris for Agence France-Presse. To her right is John Marshall Cheery. John, welcome. John Marshall Cheery has recorded, edited, and produced tens of thousands of audio productions, including Grammy-winning audiobooks, language programs, enhanced ebooks and songs for such clients as Penguin Random House, Disney, Harper Audio, Amazon, and Pearson. Just this year, John launched Boom Integrated to bring audio excellence to the emerging voice marketplace that includes podcasts and interactive smart speaker experiences. And to his right is Michelle Cobb. Michelle, welcome. Michelle has served as the Audio Publishers Association, or served on the Audio Publishers Association board since 2001 as a director and officer, and is currently executive director. She is a partner at Forte Business Consulting, which provides marketing and business development services for the publishing industry. She is publisher of both Audiophile Magazine and MMB Media, and as well is a audio publishing director for LA Theater Works. And we look forward to having Porter Anderson, editor-in-chief at Publishing Perspectives, join us shortly. In the meantime, though, Michelle, I'd like to open with you because the APA does quite a lot of surveying, keeps track of the movement of the audience in various directions. And tell us about that. Tell us particularly why that has happened. And it is fairly obvious, I suppose, but it's not just that we all carry our devices with us, but they are with us wherever we go. They're now in the car, and that's very important to this discussion. So share with us some numbers.
Sure. Of course, the smartphone was a big influence in getting more people to listen to audiobooks because you've got that in your pocket. You've also got the smart speaker helping the home listening market. And in the past couple of years, we have something called an in-dash car player. And that makes your apps go seamlessly in between your car and your devices. And so it's a very easy listening experience when you get into your car. And that's actually growing the amount of audiobook listening happening in cars. So devices are drivers of listening, and they are bringing us a much wider audience. In fact, 50% of the U.S. population has now listened to an audiobook.
Now, that's just happened this year. That was announced this year's survey, and it has been growing very quickly in just the last couple of years. So that's a trajectory that we expect to see continue to rise.
Absolutely. 20% of the U.S. population has actually listened to an audiobook in the last 12 months, and 50% ever. There's 50% more to go, but it's getting much faster. In 2018, only 44% of people had ever listened to an audiobook. So that's a 6% rise in 1 year.
Yeah, and we are talking about the collision between the world of audiobooks that you know so well and podcasting. Why should publishers in this audience care about that? There are some numbers that really they should be aware of.
First of all, if you are an audiobook listener who listens to podcasts, you consume twice as many audiobooks as audiobook listeners who don't listen to podcasts. And we often hear the term that they are kind of gateway drugs in between each other. You start listening to podcasts, you're like, ooh, I like audio. Now I'm going to try this audiobook, and vice versa. So it's really supporting the idea of audio listening, and it's creating a younger audience as well.
Well, I wanted to emphasize that point because even though 50%, as you say, of Americans have listened to an audiobook, there's still, as you said, 50% more to go, and the place to find them would be, we would imagine, in the younger demographic, and that's important.
Yeah, so younger kids are starting to listen, and then they listen throughout their lives, which gives us potential revenue for a longer period of time. And the growing listening bands are between the ages of 18 to 24 and 25 to 34. In fact, over half of the audiobook listeners, especially those that are listening frequently, are under the age of 45.
Okay. And we are seeing some interesting developments outside the audiobook world, but it will have an impact, we expect, which is that Pandora and Spotify are acquiring podcasts, and perhaps they are beginning to engage with that younger audience and get them more accustomed to podcasting as part of the listening experience.
Yeah, and places like Spotify now offer audiobooks as well as podcasts. Those are people that may not be introduced to an audiobook via the book market, but they're coming in via the music market. Different listeners, younger listeners, again, leading to growth.
Right, and this is bringing all these materials together. I can also imagine that someone go on their way to school listening to Spotify, they're not concerned with the distinctions between these formats. It's all audio, the single source.
Exactly. They're listening to something. We think of audiobooks and podcasts as being different, mostly because of business model. Podcasts are generally free and ad-supported. Audiobooks are paid for. But if you take a podcast and an audiobook in terms of business model, and you put the two materials together, you can't necessarily tell which one is the audiobook and which one is the podcast just by listening.
Right. And Valentina Caldina at CastBox, let's talk about some of the things that you're aware of with your audiences. And one thing I thought was interesting you mentioned to me earlier was that you're seeing, when it comes to podcasting, binging patterns, which are the kinds of patterns we see in other types of media. You see people listening in more extensive ways. And podcasting tends to be shorter, but in fact, they want more.
Exactly. So we see a similarity between audio drama, for example, and audiobooks listening. And for the user perspective, what we see is that for most of the users, there is no big difference between the content. You know, it's very we know as creators, and for the creators, it's very different. You know, to create the content for the book, or you're creating the content for the podcast, which is meant to be spoken. But for the user perspective, because we tried both of this content on our platform, on CastBox, so we didn't notice big difference in listening patterns. And for users, the podcast is, you know, it's one channel, and it has a breakdown by episodes. And for audiobook content, it is presented in the same way. It's a few chapters similar to the episodes, and you know, each chapter has kind of show notes. So, and we see the pattern is kind of similar. So people are listening to the audiobooks at the same time when they are doing housework, or for example when they commute to work. So this is kind of consumption is very similar to the consumption of podcasts.
Right, and CastBox had a partnership with Findaway that provided audiobooks to your platform as well as the podcasts you have. Any interesting findings there from that pilot? This distinction, again, that we make between podcasts and audiobooks, that the one is free, the other has a price, that one is shorter, one is longer. It also tends to be true that one is fiction, the other is nonfiction. But when these audiobooks were available to your podcast listeners, I think the number one category was self-development. So that's nonfiction.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a partnership with Findaway, which is a great company. They own lots of great titles. So, but for us, it was more like a trial. And at the moment, we are still thinking how to continue, because for us, as a, for a podcast platform, still most of our users are coming to the platform to listen to the podcast, especially on established markets such as the US and the UK. While on the some other markets, for example, as Germany, which, you know, is the market, the podcast listenership is not so established here. So what we see, people are coming to the platform and they search for audiobook as a category. And coming back to the partnership with Findaway, we exactly what was interesting to find that people were willing to search for self-development category. But for us, for the platform, we still have a few challenges, exactly because the difference in business model, that podcasts are free and for the audiobooks, people have to pay.
All right. Well, the audience has noticed certainly that Porter Anderson has joined us. Porter, I want to welcome you. Porter Anderson is the editor-in-chief of Publishing Perspectives, which is operated by the Frankfurt Book Fair in New York earlier this year. He was named London Book Fair's inaugural International Trade Press Journalist of the Year. And Porter, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you about what you hear as you travel, which you do a great deal of for Publishing Perspectives, globally. We are seeing interesting developments in the audiobook space that you've reported on. And one of the things that may be having an influence to bring these various formats together is that publishers are growing wary of being tied to one platform. They would like some choice. And you see that, for example, in Norway. Tell us about that.
Yeah, exactly. There's been a very interesting development. By the way, my apologies for being late, everyone. We had a slight glitch on tomorrow's show daily that just had to be fixed right away. All is fine now. But what we're seeing in Norway is the development of a company called Beat Technologies, which has offered to two of the largest publishers in Norway, our guest of honor here at Frankfurt this year, a chance to come together, form a platform of their own, and to sell their biggest best-selling authors exclusively through their own platform. It's called Fable. In English, we would see the word fable. And it's pronounced Fable in their country. And this is a case in which they had two dominant publishers. These are their two largest. And they have the greatest of the authors, of course. It's like being able to put Stephen King in together with Margaret Atwood, right? And to say you can buy them no other place. And because they have the strength of content, because they have such draw, they can do this, and they can get the audience to come to their own platform because those authors are so popular and everyone just must have the books. They caution us that in looking at this model, which they would like to see roll out in other countries, obviously, the size of the publishing house and the importance of the author is a key. Because if you don't have that, and if you're not able to get the exclusive availability of these properties, then you're not going to be able to draw the audience strongly enough to what is a lesser platform by comparison to something like Amazon or Audible, and this will be a difficulty. But if you are able to mount that kind of strong content, if you have dominance over your market, then they have developed a proprietary software that can give you a beautiful platform for downloads or streaming. They can actually integrate ebooks and even sell print books if you'd like. And they will completely scan it for you so that it's completely yours. No one would know that there was another company behind it. It's quite advanced. Beat Technology, like beating on a drum. Fascinating group.
And since that would be exclusive to your content, you could do lots of things to promote the content as well, and podcasting would be one of them. We're already seeing this happening, so we have a series of podcasts from PRH, Penguin Random House, called This is the Author, podcasts, authors reading their audiobooks, talking about their audiobooks, so to push people. It's a kind of a marketing service. Is that how publishers are seeing podcasting right at this moment? It's just marketing, but it has potential for more.
They are. There's a great wariness right now, and I know Michelle and I have talked about this. We're looking to see how things come out, if you will, because when publishers look at creating their own podcasting material, the question is, at what point do they begin to cannibalize the catalog, right? When do the visitors to your site start listening to the free material and never going on to actually buy the audiobooks? can you create paid for podcast material that they will shell out for and give you revenue for, again, though, without overwhelming the audiobook catalog? It's very difficult to know what that fine line is. And you can do some perfectly marvelous production, of course, outside of a book, about a book. I call them audio trailers, can be perfectly terrific. But when are they so satisfying and so terrific that you're starting to lose business from your audio books? Mm-hmm. It's a very tricky little question at
right.
this point.
And Jarmusch Wachiri, I know you have some exciting ideas about this potential. The collision is not a crash, but it's opening up an opportunity.
Well, that's the way I'm really thinking about it, is opening it up an opportunity. So, you know, but how do publishers take advantage of that? Because that's a very strong shift of their business model. Publishers are used to customers paying for their content. So, right, which is a wonderful, it's amazing that has not. Yeah, we like that part. But in the end, do we really care who's paying for it if the check clears? Because, you know, podcasting, from what we've understood, is pretty profitable. And it comes through, you know, the money comes from advertising or sponsorship, which are kind of two sides of the same coin, right? So that just is a shift in business model perspective. And, you know, to me, you know, we were talking about this earlier, what is the difference between an audiobook and a podcast? I mean, eventually that may be kind of squishy and nobody may care. In my opinion, it's where the money comes from, right? The money ultimately from in an audiobook comes from the consumer. They pay for it, they buy it. It's a nice business model. We'd hate to see that go away. So do we then decide that podcasts are just trailers? Well, we say just trailers, just marketing. I don't want to use the word just with that, right? Marketing, we've heard that. That's pretty cool. That tends to be a good thing. So, but I believe that the opportunities are even beyond just marketing, because we can take models that have happened in television and movies. So, you know, this is an outstanding example. I'll use it. It's all I can think of right now. Is Westworld did a smart speaker program called The Maze, and it was a choose-your-own-adventure or an escape-the-room. I actually forgot which. That was purely promotional, right? Because they've got to bring the viewers from season to season. So there's like a year-long gap, and we're all going, oh, my God, what goes on? Well, we can now, you know, scratch that itch. But we as users can scratch that itch. That, to me, is the key thing, right? And fans of a particular IP, you know, of a particular title, we can't, you know, wait to get enough. I'm a Star Wars guy. I'm Star Wars generation, right? I can't get enough, although the new Disney movies, maybe I might be. But different issue. But I love all those characters. I even want to know what that weird little alien that sits on Jabba the Hutt, I want to know his backstory, right? And we all know how much content there is with that. Now, to me, that's the opportunity. And it's not just trailers, in my opinion, because why aren't the publishers then taking advantage of advertising revenue? So now we've got that we can keep siloed the audiobook in behind its little paywalls, because it is also another differentiator. It is a book. Right, it comes from the book. Then we have, the original. Yeah, nothing gets past me. And so, but then the podcast can be, you know, Audible uses the term Audible Originals, or I'm noticing, and I'm looking at their ad in Europe, they're calling them podcasts, but it's not a book. It was written specifically for audio, and that to me is the opportunity for publishers. So publishers have gone to, in the old days, they signed an author and they had the book, and a lot of times the audio rights would go somewhere else. Well, lately they've been like, no, I don't like that. You're going to sign with us. We're going to have your audio book. Well, should we now be moving to a situation where, dear author, we are now saying, and we want your podcasts, and we want your smart speaker thing. A dear friend of mine is writing a book, and I won't use her name. I don't know I'm cleared yet, but with one of the top five publishers. And they said to her, we want to do your podcast. She's a psychologist, and so it would be a great a classic podcast interview style that would be in promotion of her as a brand, and therefore, by extension, her book. But if they're not overlaying ads on that, then somebody hasn't been doing their homework. I mean, I think they might be. So to me, it's a new, not only a way to promote the book, to keep customers engaged where they are, wherever they are, But it's also it is also a new revenue opportunity, and that's what's really exciting for publishing for me.
Just to say, we have some noise on that. So, and of course, this is a pie that's being shared by a lot of different players. But I read that podcast ad revenues, I'm assuming this is a U.S. number, $314 million in 2017, expected to more than double by 2020 to $659 million. So there is money there to be had. And I want to actually turn to Michelle Cobb to expand on this notion of the role that these originals are going to play. And originally, this notion of this discussion came about when we had discussing the effort that Reese Witherspoon and Hello Sunshine are making to create these kind of middle ground audio memoirs that aren't podcasts, really aren't yet books, something else instead.
Well, we're not called the Audiobook Publishers Association. We're called the Audio Publishers Association because plays and poems and originals have been part of this paid network for a long time. So now what we're seeing is publishers are not thinking so much about format anymore. They're thinking about IP, right? It comes out in ebook, it comes out in print, it comes out in audiobook, and then these characters can be used to make an original. And we're starting to see these original works, which may be shorter, but are still paid for, so they're not podcasts via my definition. They are expanding and exploring the universe, much as something is turned into a film or into a radio drama. All of these things are just coming together using that same IP. The only difference is how is it paid for?
Right, and the source. Yeah. I'm sorry, Porter.
How the rights go on this too?
Yeah. That's right.
Because once we produce enough of this class of material, it probably becomes a sub-right in itself. Exactly.
Right.
And as we're learning, we can get into trouble with these things in the audio world, at least into court with these things.
Well, no. that's a different story.
But that's a different story. Yeah.
You know, we are seeing authors now who are asked to do the audiobook version first or to do, you know, an original work that then becomes a book. So we're just taking these ideas, these thoughts, these intellectual properties, and we're making them into a variety of materials. And what we see now are author brandings and character brandings. That's important.
Right. And I was thinking, too, that what you have is a whole new source of the IP, because the sorts of writers who may be more adept at audio is a whole different community than the ones that traditionally literary fiction publishers would be looking for.
Sure, but the thing is, if you're a writer, you're a writer. So we see people going back and forth between books and television, between television and podcasts, all of these different things. It's just how you put the words together and the ultimate thought behind the format. You know, when you write a screenplay, you don't have to put in narration that explains what's happening. In a, you know, a radio drama, you have to do it somehow with sound or with words. So it's just putting the text together differently with a different eye, towards, you know, how people are going to imbibe the material.
Right. And
can I hop in on that?
Please, yeah, and I want to follow up. But, yeah.
But every time I disagree with Michelle, I'm wrong. But I'm going to anyway.
Go for it.
So is yes, writers are writers, and good writers can do whatever, but writing specifically for audio only is a very different discipline. It needs to be thought about to do it like outstandingly, which is, I guess, what we'd all desire. It needs to be thought about in a very specific way. I was speaking with Mac Rogers, who we're now working with as one of our writers. He wrote Steal the Stars and and something else for IGE, mega millions of downloads. When he's thinking about writing these, he's really thinking about like sonic branding, they call it, right? I own a lot of recording studios, and I hate it when that happens. It drives me crazy.
Well, I can tell.
And I feel for the audio engineer. I've been in his shoes. I did live sound for years.
We can tell it's an audio panel because that's the secret, dirty secret of the audio publishing industry is that the audio never works when we do presentations.
Well, but John, I want to pull at that thread just briefly. it's a skill. Writing is a skill that can travel across media, but it is also sometimes very important to specialize in something. And what publishers have specialized in is words. They have published words. What you are suggesting, what I think we're hearing, is that there's an opportunity to be going beyond what they're very familiar with and comfortable with.
Well, in the same way that, you know, writing a book is different than writing a screenplay, an audio play is also different, right? And we're finding a lot of similarities, strangely, between what theater, what playwrights do. For some reason, even though there's a visual perspective there, for some reason they're able to kind of get their heads around that a little better. That's where Mac Rogers comes from. And he's just able to kind of craft things in a certain way. And we're seeing that. We're working with the Dramatists Guild, which is the playwrights union in the U.S., to develop a lot of writers for that. And we're seeing that they really kind of latch on to the idea that, okay, close our eyes. We don't need to describe everything that happens, right? It needs to happen, right? We don't say, and then the car exploded. It just kaboom, you know. But that leads its own particular storytelling and writing challenges.
Right. And Porter Anderson, you raise a good point, which is the new generation of editors thinks differently about content, about these various media. And one good example is the recent winner of the PW Star Watch, Jennifer Baker, who is a podcaster as well as a publisher.
Yeah, Jen is fantastic. She's been doing this for so many years. She's got a beautiful podcast program that brings to her studio all of the people she wants to bring forward and bring to light of diversity in the publishing world. Voices we're not hearing enough from, who are actually in the publishing business already, and we just don't realize that we have such diverse members of our industry in the United States. She's based in New York, and she has been doing a beautiful job with this thing, and she is, I think, very well known for this, and does this as a labor of love. She's been doing it for more than 5 years now. It's got a terrific archive, beautifully put together and indexed, a great many transcripts, which for journalists like me are great because we can search a transcript much better than we can work with audio. And yet these are fascinating conversations, often quite deep because she has the luxury of time on this. And so while it's not a commercial property, it's a wonderful tool and engine in our industry at this point to help us with a very pressing problem that ours and many markets are dealing with, the diversity of the industry and how do we expand on it. So Jennifer Baker is fantastic, and we were delighted to see her become our superstar.
Sure. Yeah. So my question to everybody here, we'll start with you, Porter, is just how fast is all of this moving? If the marketplace is, we're seeing indications that they're moving towards this middle ground, there's a crumbling of the platforms, what do you expect to see the next year or 24 months? Will there be any particular direction you expect the business to go with regard to this?
I think we're probably going to see a lot more formalization of the originals concept. It will come through in different names and different types of branding. But particularly because we need to carve out something that we can experiment with better in terms of monetization, and something that rings a little clearer in, I think, the user's mind as different from a podcast and yet not necessarily an audiobook. We need to find the right term that's going to make sense for our user to know, that's that kind of thing I love that's about this but not quite that product. And I think we'll see that. I think we'll work that out, I hope, within the next year or so. So that we've got a better handle on that, at which point a lot of this will start to sort itself out better.
So the baby is yet to be born.
The baby's yet to be born in name.
That's right. And Michelle Cubb, I mean, for you at APA, how important is it for publishers at the moment to experiment with this, to think about audiobooks and podcasts and the baby that has yet to be named?
Well, they're clearly doing it every day. They know how to make an audiobook. They essentially know how to make... Really, a lot of these podcasts or type things are radio dramas. You know, they know how to deal with sound. So we're seeing experimentations, and we're seeing, because the revenue for audiobooks is so strong, that people can be creative. They're thinking outside the box. They're trying new things. And what that means is they attract new listeners. So it's just bringing the tide up for everyone. And, you know, of course, if I look into my crystal ball, I say, none of us are going to watch television anymore, right? We're just going to be listening to audio all the time in whatever form it is.
Right. And so, John, Marshall Cheery, one of the points in looking ahead to the future that people worry about is the potential loss of revenue that the audiobook has represented to the publishers. But subscriptions are important, and that's what podcasting is about, subscribing. So there may be some hope there on that side.
I mean, podcasting, you know, I believe, is again, it's about revenue. Where does the check come from, right? So, I mean, podcasts are paid for. People are making money in podcasting, as you just demonstrated with your statistic earlier in this panel. So, you know, is the audiobook dead, right? That's what we're kind of like talking about here. I mean, I don't see it. I don't smell it. I don't see it happening right away. There are only more subscribers all the time to the platforms, the retail platforms. So we're not seeing that right now. What we're seeing is an overall expansion of listening, right, from both podcasting and audiobooks. So this is awesome. Like, right, this is nothing but great, you know, and that's technical terms. I hope I'm not over anybody's head.
All right. Valentina, how do you see the next 12 to 24 months playing out then?
What we are discussing nowadays in the industry is that the audio drama and the interest from the listeners to audio drama and to fictional podcast is growing. And, for example, during the recent Podcast Movement Festival, which is one of the biggest event for podcasters, there were a few panels where Hollywood producers were coming and they arranged pitching sessions for podcasters because they were searching for IP, unique IP. So we think that the podcasting will be, you know, a growing source for IP for other industries for one specific reason. Because this industry is not very much regulated, and that's why people are full of creativity there, and they don't have any limits and any boundaries, so that's why they are free to create whatever. And this is the reason why, you know, other producers are keen to, you know, to search for unique IP and unique ideas in this industry.
All right. Well, I want to thank our panel. We have been enjoying a conversation about the collision between podcasts and audiobooks with Porter Anderson, Editor-in-Chief of Publishing Perspectives, Michelle Cobb at the Audio Publishers Association, John Marshall Cheery with a variety of businesses, including Boom Integrated, and Valentina Caladina with CastBox. It's a pleasure to see you all. My name's Chris Keneally for Copyright Clearance Center. Thanks for joining us.